Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I don't hear the music, so I am just simply going to start without it. Do you want me to sing?
Don't
want me to sing.
No. No.
Good evening. Marty. Hi, Ed. Okay, so good evening. I'm Tanya Hathaway, host of Tanya Talks, where your voice is heard and your story is told on Marty Oakley's famous TS Radio Network. And you just got to hear her voice. Consider yourselves privileged because Marty is freaking amazing. And she'll never tell you that, of course. So I'm going to just build her up. It's been a long time since I've kind of like done that. And it's not, you know, me really building her up. It's just saying if it wasn't for Marty, that a lot of people wouldn't be helped, wouldn't be heard. Marty has tirelessly, you know, helped other people, you know, become hosts and picked up on what she thought was, you know, who could help the mission, you know, the right way and selflessly, as Marty does. And I encourage everybody to, you know, of course, continue listening to this show, but also to just go to her page, ppjg.me, where you'll see there's a bunch of blogs from certain people that, you know, where they're writing articles, and she doesn't really, she lets things be written in a non-biased manner. You'll hear all kinds of different opinions from good writers, from people that, you know, have these opinions and thoughts. And some are based on, of course, you know, the different facts and data. And so it's really good to make sure that when you're listening to any of her shows, that Marty does not discriminate opinions. And so anyways, it's not driven by sponsorships. There's no sponsorships, as a matter of fact. So that way nobody's trying to, you know, in essence, please the stockholders, if you will. It's about the content. It is about the mission to bring justice where it belongs, to reform. And not everybody has to think along the same lines. But the great thing is that we're all in it for the same reason when we're on Marty's TS Radio Network. And that is to make what's wrong right. So I applaud you for listening tonight. I thank you for listening tonight. Again, I'm Tanya Hathaway. Please also, if you're in Oklahoma, it might be easier for you to tune in to 89.9 FM, Stephen Burke's Lighthouse Christian Radio. If you're having any internet issues or whatever, that is another forum. And Stephen has also been tirelessly standing up for what's right in Oklahoma. And in particular, Hughes County, he's a devout Christian and will never speak anything other than the truth. So I can appreciate the fact that he put himself in a spot as a nonprofit taking on these shows, which is a little bit controversial. Church didn't necessarily appreciate it at first, but Stephen Burke stood by his word, his belief, and his truth, and he stands by us. which we really appreciate that. Thank you very much, Stephen Burke. I want to say hi to my mom in New Hampshire. Gosh, Mom, I miss you. I want to wrap my arms around you virtually because I know it's best that way. And it's also, I am acknowledging, you know, Passover, for those that celebrate Passover. And I want to wish everybody a happy Passover. And it's you know, just kind of unfortunately, it's a little bit of a trying time. And when we're supposed to be, you know, those that do celebrate Passover, you know, what you do is you get together with your loved ones. You know, this is about acknowledging the purpose of Passover, you know, with Easter close by. And you know, I don't go to church on a regular basis, but I do pray on a regular basis. You know, it's not a federal holiday, but it's related to the Christian observances of Good Friday and Easter Sunday, and the Islamic day of Ashura. So this is really important to people. So people are missing out on the Passover rituals that they normally take part of, and it can't be easy. But when I was in church virtually today, so isn't that something else? Because I normally don't, you know, go to church on a regular basis. But again, I do pray. I am very much a believer in God, in a higher power, and the Ten Commandments. So I stick by the non-denominational services. And that's because I personally felt that I was let down by two different sectors of religion where I was being judged for being a single mom and going and making a living and being a strong person trying to make a living. I was accused of, you know, the devil getting to me and trying to make money, and that was, you know, I was the devil. Well. So it was a little disheartening, but it didn't steer me away from God. It didn't steer me away from believing that there's a higher power and there's more to all this than, you know, disintegrating someday in whatever way you choose to disintegrate. So in any event, I was listening virtually, and when choices are taken away from you is when you want them the most. So here I am this morning wanting to tune in to, you know, a service. And it felt really good. And it strengthened me. And so we need to just make sure we're reaching out, whether it's a certain holiday or not. And that we're not the hypocrite that's telling everybody to do that and not doing it. I can call myself a little bit of a hypocrite tonight because I haven't been doing it enough. I'm far from perfect. But what I do know is that tonight's show is the beginning of a phenomenal series with Edwin Turlington, our guest, who has gone through years of being up against public corruption in Oklahoma. And his name is Edwin Turlington. He's also referred to as the Hoss. So any content that is shared with our guests tonight, any opinion that's shared, any information that is shared is well vetted. I want to make sure that you're aware of that. It is well vetted. That being said, Tanya Hathaway, Marty Oakley, Stephen Burke, professionally and personally cannot be held accountable for any errors or mistakes that were made, that might be made, that I don't see any mistakes being made. but that is our disclosure. If there is some kind of an error, I'm the first one to correct that error. Please feel free to contact me at injusticeinoklahoma@gmail.com. injusticeinoklahoma@gmail.com. Our guest is Ed Turlington, a disabled veteran recently retired from the military. He now owns and operates a small farm in Delaware County, Oklahoma, with his wife and four young children. In 2014, Ed shot a man. He shot a man named Daryl Philpott, who is a violent felon. Daryl was caught trespassing on Ed's family farm. At the time, Philpott had multiple warrants for his arrest from neighboring Missouri, but in Delaware County, Philpott was protected. He was a protected informant. So Missouri and Delaware County, Oklahoma, they abut each other. They're 20 minutes away, depending on where you are. They can be a minute away. It depends on where you are. This violent felon was a protected police informant. And what should have been an open and shut case in self-defense, and Edwin standing his ground, turned into a county sheriff's all-out effort to protect the felon instead of a law-abiding veteran. So I met Ed. It was about 4 years after his arrest. He had done an awful lot on his own as far as making his story public through various videos on Facebook and his website. So Ed got in touch with me, and he shared some information with me. I could see by watching his video, and we'll get into this more probably in another show, in some of our next shows. I could see, I felt, a man that was going through, despite what he told me, because you can't always believe everything everybody tells you, right? But I could see the anxiety and the trauma watching those videos, the desperation. He was still being prosecuted when I invited him to speak at the inaugural Journeys to Justice rally in Oklahoma. It was at the Capitol Rotunda back in March 2019. In July 2019, after that rally and more than 5 years after his arrest, the charges against Ed were dismissed. In July 2019, more than 5 years, think about that. More than 5 years. Some, it takes longer. Many, it takes longer. I think Ed is very grateful for where he is right now. But just think about those 5 years. In February 2020, Ed published a book about his arrest. The Most Dangerous Man and Rape of Delaware County is the name of his book. The Most Dangerous Man and Rape of Delaware County. And within a month, both the district attorney, Kenny Wright, and Delaware County Prosecutor Nick Lalikas steps down from office. Is there such thing as a coincidence? I think not. This book is thoroughly referenced with over 100 footnotes and endnotes, dozens of police witnesses, witness statements, court transcripts, police photos, and legal citations. The appendix alone is 140 pages. Is that due diligence or what? It's available on Amazon.com. I'm going to plug that for you, Ed. Okay, I'm going to do that for you because...
Thank you.
I don't think he'd ask me to do that, but I'm going to do that because I think it's very important to let our listeners know where they can find it. And Ed says he'll also make it available for free for the Delaware County citizens who can't afford it. Due to the sheer volume of evidence Ed uncovered during his investigation, he set up a webpage specifically for the show, and Ed's going to say something about that and share that with you. But he did that so that we don't have to constantly refer to different webpages of that evidence. So, Ed, I want to thank you for coming on tonight. I'm just so happy for you and the fact that you pulled through. And I know because I saw you both on video. We met in person. I saw you telling your story at the Capitol, and the pain was evident, but you were clear and succinct, and you wanted to be heard. Most people in these kinds of positions feel like they're not being heard by those that need to hear them anyways. And when it comes to public corruption, how true is that? They're not being heard. When you have confidence that justice is on your side, that the truth will set you free, and that doesn't happen, it's a rude awakening. Unfortunately, it's a rude awakening for many, far too many. So we're here to let Ed's story be shared and hopefully inspire anybody going through anything like this, and hopefully to let others know that these things really can and do happen. And very often, people that have been victimized in this way hear from the people that even are close to them sometimes. You know what I mean? How can this happen? There's got to be more to this. What do you mean? You know? Or acquaintances will think, geez, you know what? But they can't do that. Well, it doesn't matter whether they can't or not. Legally, maybe they can't, but they do. Some do, not all. We need to switch around the system. We need to call out the bad actor, and you need to listen, and they need to know that we're there to expose them and not give up. Never give up. Tonight's show is in coordination with the Whistleblower Summit, with Marcel Reed and the Whistleblower Summit. Again, thank you for listening. Ed, thanks for being here. How are you tonight?
Very good, Tanya, and thank you for giving me a voice. This is the second time on your radio show and at the state capitol. I realized today, I told you that it was just like 4 months after that Oklahoma City at the Capitol speech that my charges were dropped. And so I don't think that's all that stuff matters, and it's very important. And so I just want to thank you for giving me a voice.
Well,
and everyone you help.
I appreciate that. You know, what I do this for is, you know, I have my own personal reasons what got me here, but what has empowered me more than anything is learning what I learned that was happening in Oklahoma, as well as it does, unfortunately, in other states. Oklahoma, I believe, is probably one of the worst, if not the, when it comes to all around public corruption in the various sectors of government there. I'm just glad that, you know, hopefully it empowers other people to not give up, to still have faith, to, you know, both you have, you know, finally realized justice, and as well, Vince Wilmoth was on our show last week, actually he was on Marty's show where we co-hosted together, telling his story of justice. So we have, you know, a couple of people that spoke, and there was several speakers there. There was the Holtz Clause. you know, the story on behalf of the Holtz Clause and a couple of speakers for them. There was you. There was James Treat, who is still diligently seeking justice in Calvin, Oklahoma, and we're taking it to another level because he's still left without it. But you were able to come through. You know, Tina Gertz, who, you know, we basically put on the rally together about wrongful convictions, public corruption. She's still fighting, not just for her own personal life, but for others. And I know that you're also a voice for others. And so this is what's important, is we do what we can. We do what we can. I mean, I've researched case law, you know, until my eyes fell out of their sockets and shared it, sometimes more, you know, than other times. You know, it's important to have somebody to talk to that believes in you. And that's exactly what we're doing here, is we're letting others know that are listening because maybe they're in pain. We believe you. Contact me at injusticeinoklahoma@gmail.com. We believe you. If you can't give me anything that's going to give me what I need to believe in you, then I'm sorry. Usually they drop off. People like that drop off. But when I have piles and piles and piles of information, and there's nothing but just somebody bad-mouthing, saying something about somebody else, and that's supposed to be the defense, guess what? Who am I going to believe in? Who are you going to believe in? Well, I believe in Ed Turlington. So, Ed, tell us about the incident. Can you briefly tell us all about your ties to the local area?
Yes, ma'am. My family pioneered Delaware District in Indian Territory, which is now Ottawa and Delaware counties, Oklahoma, before statehood. And that's relevant because those two counties make up the 13th Judicial District. It's the same DA, and that's, there's problems in both counties that go back and forth. I've discussed in my book. But I'm the sixth generation of my family here. I'm raising the seventh. I attended NEO A&M, it's Northeastern Oklahoma A&M, in Miami, which is in Ottawa County, for semester in the late 80s. And I didn't complete it. I left to join the Army. I served as a paratrooper in the 82nd. Then I did a tour overseas where it's a bodyguard for a four-star general who's the deputy chief of command of Allied Forces Europe, where I held the security clearance. I served in the National Guard in Oklahoma and Florida and the Army Reserves. And while serving in Army Reserve units, I also worked as a high school teacher and a unit administrator, which is a dual status civil student. Civil servant. You're working for the Department of Defense as a civilian, but you're also in the reserves while you're doing it.
Okay, so I want to thank you for your service, of course. And obviously, you have served plenty of public sectors. And yet, you know, look, the show is about public corruption. So it's kind of interesting here because, you know, the show is about public corruption. You have been a public servant. You have been, you know, and you've been, and you, obviously you are a veteran, so you're willing to lay down your life for our country. I am relieved to know that you are an ethical man. You're a believer in being able to go out and have your own land and to protect your family and to have a family and your freedom to do as you wish on your own property. And obviously right now, you know, we have some restrictions to get our country through some very trying times. And I've been spending a lot of time, you know, when this first happened in New York, and for the naysayers out there, this is happening. However it got here, by the way, this virus, however it got here, that's a whole nother conversation. The point is, it is happening. I know many people, even more today than I did yesterday, who have come down with this virus or survived it, thank God. Thank God. I have a sister at Dartmouth Hitchcock Medical Center in New Hampshire. Dartmouth Hitchcock Medical Center is a trauma hospital, okay, and it's always in the top five in the country. I have a sister who's there, you know, basically on the front lines and having contact with coronavirus patients every day. And this is real. So during a time, at this time, it's worth it for we the people to care about preserving ourselves and getting through this. That's just my opinion. Preserve ourselves and our neighbors, our loved ones, our family, and get through this. And it will come back, people. We will come back. What's your opinion on that?
Oh, I believe that this is temporary like everything else, and it too shall pass. And that's a very good point about, I hadn't even considered it actually, that the very system that I served my, I retired, I didn't say that earlier, but the system that I spent my whole life serving is are the ones who, did that to me. But
exactly.
Exactly.
Okay. So Ed, the government has put a lot of trust in you over the years, right?
Yes, ma'am. Both federal and state governments.
Okay, so after you retired, as you said, from the National Guard, what brought you back to Delaware County?
I married my wife in 2008. I was teaching in Tulsa, and that's where I met her. Next year, I became a father after we got married. And I told her on our first date I wanted to raise my children in the country where I grew up, and that's what we did. In 2013, she was hired as the high school biology teacher in Miami, which is the county seat for the next county I told you about, this part of my judicial district. By then, my second son, Haas, was born, and Julie was pregnant with our daughter, Audrey, and then Julie had
now,
our fourth child,
Duke. Now, did I meet Haas? Was Haas that adorable young man who came with you to the Capitol?
That
no.
was Hardy, the curly-headed.
That was Hardy. Oh,
yes,
I love that kid. Oh, what a
great
kid.
Yeah, he's great. Everyone does. He's super. And then our last one, Duke, was born. She was pregnant and gave birth to Duke during this 5 year of the prosecution. So this is, you know, having these little children and being pregnant, and it was about killed her too. You know,
oh,
knowing that,
word.
Thinking I was going to go get sent off for prison for 10 years for something that, not just that I didn't do, because there came a point whenever the prosecutor knew I didn't do what they were charging me, and they still didn't drop it for years. And that's when it really starts to upset, you know, the stress levels get just about unmanageable.
No, all you know, you've got this beautiful family farm, you've moved out there, and you've got another child on the way, and suddenly, you know, she thinks there's a possibility, which never could have dreamed of being put in jail wrongful convictions of public corruption against you because of personal interests were more aligned with a criminal than a respectable citizen and veteran. Okay, so.
Yeah. I lost also my train of thought, Tanya. How we got to Delaware County was in 2013, my brother Lance, I think you've talked to Lance.
I sure have. Boy, oh boy. Do
yes,
I think
ma'am.
Highly of him, too. Wow, what an upstanding
he's a
man.
Fulbright
Can you let
colonel
our listeners know who
Army.
Lance is?
Yeah, he's a Fulbright colonel in the Army JAG Corps. He's a member of the Oklahoma Bar. He started off as a private in the Oklahoma National Guard in the infantry. He's a paratrooper and a French commando, and he's an expert medic when he was enlisted, and some others, and a good soldier. He's done, I have in the book, I think, five tours overseas, maybe four, I can't remember, in the Middle East, and he came out to visit on a pass. I think he was stationed in Bragg at the time. I can't remember. But we were looking for a house. It was right after Julie got his job teaching in Miami. And about an hour away, like you said, 4 miles from where Oklahoma, Arkansas, Missouri meet in Delaware County, We found this farm in the holler at the bottom in the woods, middle of nowhere, and it was beautiful, except that it had been all dopers. It had been foreclosed for years, and dopers had ripped out all of the electricity in the house, in the barn. It had a huge barn, concrete floor, hay barn. They took out electricity from that. And the coop, you know about chicken coops.
Oh, I do.
They were had electricity out there. They ripped that out to the well house, to the tool, everything. And that's why it hadn't been sold in so long. And
it was a project. It was a beautiful piece of property, but it also took
dopers.
A certain person. You're right. The dopers were out there, but it took a certain person that was willing to put the time into this land, and you still had the energy to do it, and you have the
yes,
and you saw a diamond in the rough that you
well,
want where you wanted to raise your family.
They stole the 30-year-old toilet, which at the time told me that anyone that's going to steal this stuff has got to be a destitute, a really bad drug addict, because that is not. That's not a profitable venture, criminal venture. It takes a lot of work to strip wire and, you know, and of course it's in the middle of nowhere, so they can go down there in the woods where they're surrounded and they can spend all day ripping off stuff and doing dope deals and everything. I later found out, Tanya, through informants, and this is one of the things that, you know, I can't post reference to, that Philpott, the guy I shot, the guy he's with was an electrician. Obviously did for that first job. But I found out later on that they're the ones that went and, you know, stole everything out of there. Which stands to reason.
Okay, so for our listeners, you know, we know that there are competing stories, but let's set the stage. Mm-hmm. You're in your home with your family, right? You're already
yes,
established.
Ma'am.
On the family property, and what happened? Let's set the stage. Let's let our listeners know what happened.
Well, I was my son and I had we closed on this place 7 days prior, and of course, like I said, it's down in the woods in the bottom of this holler. I have a super long driveway, so you can't see my vehicles, or you can't even tell that I bought the place. Hardy, my son, we'd been camping there. He was five at the time, going to the mm-hmm. bathroom outside because there's no running water or anything. We're trying to get it repaired and everything. And on this, the eighth day, Hardy just happened, I dropped him off at my mom's in Miami where my wife was staying and the rest of
right.
my family. So I went back down there. I came in from town, and there's these three guys that are standing around my family's no trespassing sign. And they have a pallet out there.
So they're standing around. Like, how far away is that no trespassing sign?
Well, I have the pictures on my book, and I should have them linked to firstfamilies.net/Tanya, T-A-N-Y, .htm. Now, that page, I don't know if you've seen it, but it's old from the last time I was on your show, but it should still have a lot of those links on it. But that
right,
that
and you're working on
sign,
that, too.
Right, and that no trespassing sign was probably 20 feet from the road. You can't not see it. And they were standing directly underneath it around a fire they had built, and right next to them was a pickup on my property, on my family farm, that didn't have license plates on it. And I could see they had these cans and stuff set up. It looked like they were processing meth. And one of the cans that I saw was Coleman Camp Fuel. And if you go Google ingredients for meth, you'll see that that's one of the main ingredients. And
okay, so
actually,
let's stop right there. So
okay.
If it's not meth that it was being used for, what else can Coleman, you know, can it be used for? And were they using it for any of those uses that you would actually go purchase it for? Let's just get that out of the way.
It's for lanterns. For lanterns, or, you know, and they didn't have a lantern
exactly.
out there or anything like that. So
there were no lanterns, but there was Coleman
exactly.
Okay, okay. And I just want to clarify one other thing before we go much further, because we're going to get into, you know, we're going to get into a little bit of the character of Daryl Philpott. But I just want to clarify this. Thank you. I mean, do you have anything against addicts? Because, you know, there's alcoholism, there's, you know, drug addicts, there's food addicts, there's this, there's that, the other. I personally, you know, I feel horrible for people that are, you know, don't have control over certain aspects of their life and are actually, like, physically, you know, addicted to something. But that being said,
well, let me ask you a question,
Tanya.
That does
not condone any illegal
behavior. Well, let me tell you something that you might find interesting. That a cop, a friend of mine, he's named David Sargent. I told you about him tonight a little bit. I grew up with him in Athens. His dad was a coach at this little school. My dad was a superintendent. I've known their family very well. And I hadn't talked to him for 30 years. And I talked to him. I can't remember if I called him or he called me, but it's about 2 months ago. We were talking, and we're talking about this niche-based industry that we have here in law enforcement. And I found that the cops that are from here, the good cops, they don't like it because they know that it's not a good way to get information. And snitches will tell you anything. And there's a saying here, roll three, go free. It's like an industry. You go in there, you rat on someone, they have someone else to go arrest and put them in jail. And back and forth. What David told me was that, and I hadn't thought of this, because it's really, it's a soft-hearted thing to say for a cop, but he said the thing about the snitch industry they have here is that the addicts don't ever get away from it. Because once they snitch, like Harlan Moore, the sheriff here, and Gail Wells, and the dirty cops will never let you go. And that's why David didn't like the snitch. What bothered him so much is because it kept people with that crowd. Because once they leave that crowd and they reform, they're no good. Whenever Lance came to Grove, he gave a briefing to the
brother,
community.
That's your brother.
Yes. Right. The colonel who briefs generals every day and, you know, has 50 lawyers and paralegals who work for him right now. The prosecutors that work for him have supervisors who have supervisors who report to Lance. So he's a pretty good lawyer.
Right.
But he came and gave a briefing to these some local citizens, and this one big old country boy came out to Lance and I afterwards, and the reason he was there is he said that he used to do – in fact, he told us that he had done meth with the guy that Philpott was with, that they'd partied together back in – But he said he used to have a real problem, and he got into some trouble, but he said he cleaned himself up. He said he was reformed. And he's a big, muscular, had all his teeth, good-looking guy. I mean, he wasn't gone like Philpott. But he said he was an addict. He said he got into some trouble, but he got away from him. He was taking care of his family. And he said out of the blue that Gail Wells, who we'll get into later, approached him and said, I need you to – he wanted to snitch on someone. And he said, Gail, I don't know them. I don't hang around them anymore. I can't testify to that. And Gail said, oh, yes, you are. He said, I don't want any part to do with this. Now, I'm not going to. And he said that Gail set him up, framed him. And that's why he was at that briefing with me.
So that's
the point I'm saying, that I do feel sorry for these addicts. And people can reform. It's hard to reform in Delaware County, Oklahoma, because people – that's what they have. That's what they make their living.
It's condoning their behavior. It's condoning, you know, it's condoning the relationships with the birds of a feather flock together. And you know, if he had cleaned up his act and then he's really doing the good thing, you know, to help clean things up, that's one thing. But if he's using that snitch position to allow himself to continue the crimes,
right, like Philpott,
that's not okay. So
exactly.
You know, if you know you're an addict, you know, it's up to you. You're an adult. What are you going to do with it? It's responsibility and accountability. And there comes a time, folks, and many of us are listening to this saying, yes, absolutely, because when your addiction hurts other people, when your issues hurt the people that you love the most, or you find yourself with friends that are addicts and or just, you know, and that's your whole world, is that really the right thing to be, the right thing to do? So this man was a known felon, a known meth head, a known drug dealer, and we'll get into more of those details later, who came to your property for the sole purpose of making drugs with a couple of other people there. And you saw him out there and confronted him. So these are serious allegations. I know that. And then I know that there are competing stories as to what happened. So before we get into that, you know, that's what we just did. We assessed his credibility. That's what we know about the man that Ed Turlington, you shot. You shot him.
Yes, ma'am. I not right off the bat. Right. I got out and I told them that they were under arrest, and I don't know if I told you about my credentials. I guess we'll get in a second about as far as that goes, law enforcement. But I arrested him, and while he was under arrest, he fled, and he's been convicted for fleeing cops twice before. But he walked back because they got in their truck after when I saw them standing out there. There was a guy in the road. And he was the brother of my neighbor, who is Phil Pott's cousin, who Phil Pott was living with. Okay? This guy was Joseph
Darryl
Bradley.
Phil Pott is the perpetrator here. Okay.
Yes. And he is standing with two other guys, and there's a guy out here in the road who was talking to him in his car. And so I pulled up to this guy to try out, before I said anything to those three guys, I was trying to get their names in case I lost them because they did run off, which I expect them to do. And as I was talking to him, they just looked at me and they ran to this truck that didn't have tags on it. But I asked this guy, are you with them? Well, he turned out to be Joseph Bradley, who was the cousin of Jack Bradley, who Phil Pott was staying with.
Which was right next door to your property.
Yes, ma'am. He's the next neighbor down the dirt road, probably a half mile or so on the other side of the road. And so they were close by. But so I was talking to Joseph, and those guys looked at me and made a beeline, grabbed a bunch of stuff, went straight to their truck, left the fire burning, which they admitted later in court. And of course, I have the transcripts at they're at rapeofdelco.com/prelim, PRELIM. .PDF, all the transcripts from the preliminary hearing. But they
And so to our listeners, in case you didn't get that or you want to refer to it later, if you are listening through live stream, the very link you're listening to will be the archive to listen again for this information. Go ahead.
Okay. So anyway, I arrested them under Oklahoma statutes. And
can you tell us what that statute was, please?
Yes, ma'am.
Stand your ground. Essentially, right?
We have stand your ground, and we have Oklahoma. This is even better. Oklahoma has the best videos. And if you go to Rape of Delco, D-E-L-C-O, go to YouTube and just look for it. I have a set of videos there. I'm putting more there. But two of them are about citizens' arrest. And Oklahoma has the best in the nation if they're followed, mm-hmm. if they're respected, which they're not by Delaware County Sheriff, obviously. But it's Section 202 of Title 22, and it's arrest by a private person. It states a private person may arrest another for three things: for public offense committed or attempted in his presence. And a public offense just means anything that can be punishable by law. It's any crime. When the person arrested has committed a felony, although not in his presence. Number three, when a felony has been and committed, and he has reasonable cause for believing the person arrested to have committed it. And then on the video, I mentioned the other statute surrounding it, that in Oklahoma, a citizen can literally knock down the door of another citizen to go arrest him. A citizen can, for a felony that he didn't even see take, I mean, that he didn't even see take place if he has probable cause. And you're supposed to be backed up in the court. And you look at, and in that video, I explained.
So, and that's
same,
even off of your property.
Yeah, right. You go to another guy's house and knock down his door and arrest him, just like a cop, if you have probable cause to do it for a felon. Even if you didn't see him doing it, if you have probable cause. So, so in the cops, the statutes, and I mentioned it in this video, it says copy and paste, the exact same thing. It's exact. The only thing cops can do that's different is they can arrest by warrant from a judge. But the right to arrest, in Oklahoma, a citizen can arrest the sheriff just as much as the sheriff can arrest a citizen. He has just as big, much of a legal right, but there's probable cause there. It's really – Oklahoma does a lot of outstanding stuff, Tanya. It's just not – if the laws aren't respected, they don't matter. And, yes, as far as it being corrupt, I'll tell you something Lance told me about law school. In his constitutional law class, and the very – constitutional law is all, you know, federal, Supreme Court. It's constitutional rights being broken and figuring out what they are. Well, he said when he looked at the index of his book, of his text, he said the entry for Oklahoma – took up like half a column. He said no other state had anywhere, he said like the next state that had as many cases cited in that constitutional law book had like one-fourth as many. And a lot of states aren't in the index at all. I don't know if you can relate to what I'm saying. It's just that Oklahoma has a lot of constitutional, a lot of corruption, a lot of constitutional problems.
Right, and it doesn't necessarily mean, okay, so – but, all right, so just to clarify this, you're not necessarily saying that, you know, anybody who encounters a situation like this, that you would suggest that they go break down somebody's door and arrest them, right? Because obviously they can put themselves at risk, but it is an option. And you being, a seasoned veteran, a police officer, somebody who happens to be, you know, beyond a little bit of the average citizen and knowing your laws, you took it upon yourself to, you know, obviously it would have taken longer for somebody to get there to help you. And, you know, just I want our listeners to know that there are laws in at least 25 states that allow that there's no duty to retreat an attacker in any place in which one is lawfully present. Those states are Alabama, Alaska, Arizona, Florida, Georgia, Idaho, Indiana, Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, Michigan, Mississippi, Missouri, Montana, Nevada, New Hampshire, North Carolina, Oklahoma, Pennsylvania, South Carolina, South Dakota, Tennessee, Texas, Utah, and West Virginia. So at least 10 of those states, include language stating that one may stand his or her ground, and that's Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Idaho, Kansas, Kentucky, Oklahoma, Pennsylvania, and South Carolina. That was, that's in the law. That is in the law. You don't have to agree with it. If you don't agree with it, you know, contact.
Change it.
You change it, okay? But in the manner that Ed went about standing his ground where his own property was being trespassed upon with others that seemed rather comfortable there, essentially, you know, with a meth lab. So these guys knew they were trespassing, and you know, it's a serious allegation for you to make, but they're responsible. How are these other guys responsible for what Daryl Philpott was doing? Is it guilt by association, or let's talk about that a little bit.
The guys that he was with?
The guys that were
they're trespassing.
That were there. Right.
They're trespassing. I will say that the other two were not like him. He was by far the craziest one of the bunch, wild-eyed. He stunk like cat urine, which is how meth smells. And you could smell, he smelled liquor on him. He admitted to drinking two bottles of liquor that evening in the hospital, and we're getting hit of ourselves. But Gail Wells, the dirty cop who was sent to interview him, didn't even give him a toxicology report. I mean, a test. The test is alcohol levels. So,
right.
But he was drunk and high, you know, visibly out of his mind. And the other guys were trespassing with him. So that's why the charge was the initial charge of trespassing, suspicion of, you know, making drugs. But I think you asked me about Philpott's history. At that time, this is one that when I first got out of jail, I went and did my own investigation. The first thing I found out in jail was he was a snitch. I confirmed that with sources in the law enforcement community. Like I said, I'm from here. I know a lot of people. And
right.
But then he had active bench warrants for DUI and poaching, which are both kind of related to what he's doing with me, you know, on my play. But he had, as far as, you know, being somewhere he's not supposed to be, doing something he's not supposed to be doing. And but they were out of Missouri, and they were active. And the guys at the ER told me, I went in and talked to them, they said, well, they knew, Wells called them, they knew he had warrants. You know, of course they do. That's police procedure, I'm just saying, in case someone thinks that they, for some reason, that fell through the cracks, it didn't. But he also, at that time, he had a felony conviction for theft and for burglary and for drug dealing.
And
Arkansas,
that was a crime. Okay.
Right, and that was in Arkansas.
Okay, so let's fast forward a little bit. They had him in Delaware County Courthouse, and instead of arresting him, they protected him in exchange for his testimony against you. And I believe you have referred to that as snitch immunity, and that is what drives the entire incarceration industry out there. So the shooting, they got out of their truck. You executed
yes.
a citizen's arrest, right? And that's legal.
Yes,
that is legal, as we've just
yes.
gone over. All right.
Yes.
And so we know that you are able, you're qualified to make that determination about probable cause because of your private investigation training. And you, if I remember correctly, you were, you are a retired Delaware County Sheriff Deputy, and you've covered the rules for making a citizen's arrest. All right, and you talked about the video that you made. So.
No. The man that taught me my private investigation class was retired, was a former Delaware County Sheriff's Deputy. His name was Mark Wall. He's also the former mayor of Jay. And he knows how.
Jay is a town
yes.
in Delaware County.
That's the county.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the county seat. The county seat with average, the per capita income is $13,000, $45. So it's a very poor place.
Oh, dear. Let's hope the cost of living is very low there.
Well, yes, it is. But still, it's a very economically depressed area, which people love that because there's no one easier to bully than poor people. And so, but that guy was a retired, Mark Wall, now he's a police chief at NEO, the school I told you about earlier.
Okay.
But I've learned probable cause, rules of use of force, what constitutes reasonable self-defense. I learned that Oklahoma statute. Cops don't learn that citizen's arrest statute because there's no one ever uses it. Lawyers don't use it. But private eyes,
right.
That's what, you know, they're private, so they learn that. But I made it based on my training that I just, you know, had my entire life. I did it by the book.
Okay, so Ed, based on your training certifications, you determined the men were trespassing for sure. They started a fire, and they may have been manufacturing meth. You attempted to execute a citizen's arrest. Let's talk about that now. How did they respond?
Okay, I literally shouted, "You are under arrest." The craziest looking one, Philpott, got out of his truck, walked back to the fire, was without my permission, which is fleeing arrest. So he's now back on my property, trespassing again. I followed him, and by this time, their accomplices had driven their truck back up the hall to the top of the hall or where the fire was. And so Philpott, he grabbed a glass bottle off the ground, which he later admitted in court. And he began circling around me, trying to get between, like dogs will do. They'll get, you know, front and back. And here we are on a dirt road in the middle of nowhere. I couldn't put my back up against a wall or anything. And the truck was kind of to my side. I didn't want to get run over. But I had, you know, I had my gun trained on Philpott. Well,
wait a minute.
So
you had your gun pointed to Philpott?
Yes, and he had a bottle.
Okay.
It was like a little standoff we were
having.
He
had that bottle, right? Now, wasn't that didn't he break that bottle so that it could be used as more of a weapon, if I remember correctly?
No. He didn't break it. He just picked it up.
Okay. Thank you.
That's fine. It's been a long time since I've seen you. But he began circling me, and it sounded like this guy. Philpott was screaming. He said before the show, you know, it's a Christian show, so I have to kind of be careful, but he even admitted to, and you can listen to the interview at rapeofdelco.com/philpott.mp3. This entire interview, this dirty cop is there. You can hear the dirty cop change his testimony. I mean, literally, get an answer from Philpott, reassert it, but the opposite thing back to Philpott to get him on track for the narrative again, to try to cover for him. And he does it all throughout. Philpott, he grabbed a bottle, and he's calling me a punk MF-er and challenging me to fight. And he even admitted that to the deputy. So all this stuff is going on. And then I thought that I heard the door open behind me. It sounded like to me. At the same time, Philpott lunged. So this is it. I'm getting ready to get rolled on this dirt road in the middle of nowhere. And probably killed or, you know, close to it.
Right.
And so at that moment, I aimed down and shot one time in his leg, away from his vital organs. And
so that's what you were actually aiming for. Did you actually shoot him where you're aiming for?
Oh, actually, I was aiming at his knee, and he moved his leg as I pull the trigger, but yes, I was aiming for the lower leg, and that's what I hit, and it was, you know, 3 feet away. So if I was wanting to shoot him in the chest or head, that's what I would have done.
Right. Okay. So and I know that he was trying to provoke you. I know this from prior interviews and your, you know, and through reading, you know, obviously, and I'm not going to say the real words that he said because of a number of things. You know, this is regulated by, you know, the Communications Bureau, and we're on a Christian radio station, so people will easily be able to figure this out, that he was calling you a punk MF-er, and he challenged you to fight, and that
yes,
was
ma'am.
By the fire, am I correct? And that's right where you said the no trespassing sign is?
Yes, ma'am. We were at the fire when he picked up the glass. Later on, at a preliminary hearing, and you can go read it. This sounds insane, but he said at the preliminary hearing was 20 months later, so he had time to get coached. But the preliminary hearing that he picked
months
up
later, 20 months.
Exactly, you're right.
So
and the speedy trial statute is set
trial,
for 18 months.
You're right, right, exactly. Okay, 20
right.
months later. 20 months. And that
exactly.
wasn't at your doing, was it? I mean, did you ask for these extensions?
No. I never waived my right to speedy trial. That up until then, after the preliminary hearing, my lawyer, who we'll get to later, he's now been charged by the state attorney general for soliciting murder with a drug dealer, cop killer from Delaware County. So he has drug contact.
And listeners, and thank you so much, because you are the listeners. This is why this is a series. Oh my goodness!
Exactly.
There is
my defense attorney is a former assistant DA for Delaware County, so he's involved. It's so dirty here. You know, they're all into drugs and murder, and
Are they into drugs, or are they into the solicitation for drugs because they make money off of it? Because I know that if you're actually typically a drug doer, that usually you do up your own profits, correct? So but they don't mind others doing those drugs, so they can make a profit while they are, you know, thinking business-wise in an illegal way, and just laughing their way to the bank.
Exactly. Well, I'll tell you something, Tanya. You know, I have a whole chapter. I know you love this, how you think about attorneys, but I have an entire chapter devoted to this defense attorney. And I'm waiting for him to try to sue me. He can go for it. If he does,
wouldn't that be great? Isn't that great when somebody who's corrupt tries to sue you for, for slander or whatever it may be? It's like, oh, good. Now I get to prove it.
Exactly.
Now I get to prove that I'm telling the truth.
Exactly. And I've challenged them.
And listeners, there's a lot of good lawyers out there, you know, whether they work privately, whether they work for the government. And my brother in New Hampshire, being one of them, who, you know, he'll never be a judge because he actually is not, you know, one that goes along the political correctness lines. He just follows the rules of law. He just follows what he's supposed to follow. I haven't always agreed with what he's fought for, and then he is very willing to point out to me, Tanya, look here, this is what the statute, this is what the rule is, blah, blah, blah. Okay, guess what, he's doing his job. You don't like those laws, you get out there and talk to your representatives. So, I mean, so my brother, in other words, says there, and he's not the only one. He is a phenomenal public servant. He was actually a phenomenal defense attorney before he became a public servant. So there's good guys out there. There's good women out there. There's great people that are truly, genuinely out there to protect the citizens in which they serve. Sadly enough, it is a bit of a needle in a haystack in Oklahoma, as you're hearing. Where were we?
Well, I'll tell you something before I forget. Again, it'll come up later in another show, but the undisputed fact is I shot him one time. I didn't shoot a bunch of times after that, just one round shot, 3 feet away in his leg, okay? While I was in jail for 2 nights and 3 days, the sheriff told reporters, and I think you've seen the article, it's in the book, the sheriff told the reporters that they were looking to charge me with attempted murder for shooting him one time. And you know, but that's like that girl I told you tonight got charged with 5 felonies for something that, when you look at the probable cause, the police report I sent you, they don't match up. She didn't do – there was someone there they could have charged, but they didn't. He's a meth felon who apparently is a snitch because in 2016 he got arrested for felony burglary and it got dismissed and, you know, on and on and on. But, you know, that's how they overcharge people here in Delaware County and charge people they shouldn't be charging at all. I just wanted to note that about the sheriff.
Right. Yeah, so this is not a coincidence here. This is not a coincidence. You know, this is something that continuously – is happening, sadly. Now, you've admitted that if they knew who you were, right, if they knew who you were, that they never would have done this to you. Now, that doesn't make it right if you were guilty. So if you really did go after him to try to kill him, right, or if you were truly committing crimes against him, you know, it sounds like you have the feeling that they'd be willing to still defend you instead of the snitch because one of their own would come first before a snitch, right? Right. I appreciate that. And I know you don't condone that. I appreciate the
My
fact
family
that
left here in the 80s.
Set the record
and that's one thing I wanted to say is that the DA, the prosecutor, the sheriff, the dirty cop, none of them are from here. And so that's why none of them, they didn't recognize my name. They had no idea who I was. And they still wouldn't have prosecuted
him. And
neither
do they need to if they're looking at this in general. But,
right.
Again,
they
if they knew who you were, right, you know, and I'm putting up my little fingers like quotes here as if people
but
can
Tanya,
see
they
me.
They thought
that
I was a drug dealer like Philpott. They thought that I was a drug deal gone that bad, and I was, you know, a guy who was a poor drug addict like Philpott, and they'd arrest me, and I'd start getting to their snitch system. And that's what they do. They arrest people and to get them in their incarceration industry they have here.
Right. So, okay. So the people that really didn't care who was wrong are Sheriff Harlan Moore and Deputy Gail Wells. So,
right.
But that being said, Philpott admitted to picking up the glass bottle, correct?
Yes. Oh.
And
okay.
He admitted
yes.
to attacking you, correct?
He said that the reason in court, he said the reason he picked up the bottle was to check it to see if enough raindrops had filled it so that he could put out the fire that he had started on the land that he was trespassing and abandoned. So that's why he picked it up. So that's what I was getting at earlier.
Exactly. You know, because abandoning a fire is illegal. And of course, let's not forget the trespassing, right?
Right. Yes. It would have taken a lot of raindrops to fill that bottle and still wouldn't have been enough to put out the fire, but
yeah,
that's what his story was.
That kind of sounds like my dog ate it. Okay, but you
right.
have that admission. You got that on your website as well, correct?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, that prelim page I told you about.
Okay. So, all right. So there was something to do with being framed for that, and that's exactly it. You were framed for attempted murder, and that's what they had actually charged you with. So it sounds absurd to frame someone for attempted murder when they shot someone at one time, and that was you, when you shot someone one time at their leg. So did they think that you were trying to shoot him in the chest and missed?
Let me clarify. They never did charge me with that. That's what they wanted to charge. That's what the sheriff said that they were investigating. And he told a lot of whoppers that are provable. Some of them, you know, may be factually incorrect, but most of them are obviously intentional lies to the reporter. And I can prove all those at another show. But that was – that he just said that they were wanting – they were investigating it and they intended to, but they never did.
So you shot close enough to where you intended to, right? And you're an expert
right.
marksman, correct?
Yeah, yes, ma'am. For 20 years, qualified expert. But remember, when I was in jail, when he was telling them that, Tanya. Yes,
yep.
But when he told them that they were wanting to give me a attempted murder, he still didn't know he thought I was poor and had no resources, and I'd be in jail until, you know, God knows when, whenever I, you know, pled out or, you know, started ratting on other people.
Yeah, and
so
that's pretty
then
much
by the time
who
they figured
go after. But with all due respect, it doesn't matter whether you're poor or with no resources or not, because if you're innocent, you're correct. It shouldn't matter. Right. So, okay. So include the sheriff, the county sheriff. No one, including the county sheriff, if I remember correctly, the Delaware County Sheriff, actually believed that you were trying to kill Philpott, but that's what the sheriff told the reporters. They were looking to charge you with the day after the shooting. So remember, the Delaware County Sheriff is used to dealing with extremely poor people, as you said, who don't have the means to fight back. Darn it, I can't tell you how mad that makes me, because that goes to show that those that can't fight back don't find justice. And there are those that can afford to fight back too, that I do know, don't find justice as well. But it should not be, whether you have the means or not. So they assumed that you were destitute or a drug addict. They assumed that you were drug addicts, like Philpott, and the shooting was probably a drug deal gone bad. And that they're not, that's not foreign to them. So this is something that happens, but because in that area, right? But because Philpott was pretty much a snitch that was immune to prosecution, they chose him over you.
Exactly.
Okay. Okay. So, basically, it was to make somebody plead guilty to a lesser offense. They were trying to get you. I remember this. They were trying to get you to plead guilty to a lesser offense, which I have seen and heard more times than less. Okay, where they try to scare you into pleading to a lesser of offense, and sometimes they wind up not putting that in writing the same way they promise you, and the victim of the public corruption simply signs out of fear, believing that they're pleading to a lesser offense, and it winds up being even worse. And then, you know, there are times when the fear of God is just put into the victim, saying that you'll get more than the actual crime, if there even is a crime, that you'll get more time, that you will be in prison for even longer than what the actual crime, if there was one, would allow with the punishments that are actually... To begin with, right. Okay. So why would they intentionally overcharge a crime, Ed?
Well, two reasons here. The main one is to get people to roll over on other people, to make it as bad as they possibly can. Second one is to get people to plea. And like the girl I told you got charged with these five felonies, that none of them, she doesn't even have one of those even match the report. But so, you know, but like I said, she's not in the system. She's not part of the snitch system yet, and her husband did, or neglected to do what they're charging her with. She couldn't have, there's no way she could have done it because she didn't have a car. It was totaled. You know what I'm talking about? What from the case
yes,
we're talking
I do.
About? But her husband could have most certainly taken care of his kids. He didn't do it though, but. He's a felon, a meth felon. He has a conviction. He's already part of the system. He's already getting burglary charges dismissed and God knows what else. So move on to the next person. And I'm telling you, it's a law enforcement industry. It's a police informant industry here.
Right, right. Now, and you've said that. And I know you didn't intend to kill him, okay? So let's just, I know you said that, if you're looking at a lifetime prison, it's tempting to accept the deal for years, which they tried to say that that this was an attempt of homicide, but you did not ultimately get charged with that. They want you to become a snitch to get other people arrested. So you feed the machine, just like you're talking about.
Exactly.
You didn't intend to kill him. What was your intent, Ed? What was your intent when you shot
to
him?
To stop him, to get him to stop the attack, and at the lowest use of force level possible. And
how far away from you was he when he was holding up that bottle to go after you with?
Close enough that he could have hit me with it if you'd have swung. Within arm's reach.
How many feet? Okay,
3 feet
about
or
what,
less.
3 feet? 3 feet, okay.
Right.
So if you wanted to kill him, you actually could have. If you're just that far away, you could have shot him in the chest. And you could have shot him more than once, right? So
you could have killed all of them.
Your behavior that day was simply to stop him, not to kill him, based on your behavior. It wouldn't have been hard for
right.
you to
kind of stop the attack.
Okay. All right, so let's go to reporting the shooting. What happened after you shot him?
He limped over to his, well, number one, he stopped screaming and cursing. He limped over to his truck, got in it, and drove off.
He stopped screaming and cursing? You mean he wasn't cursing in pain?
Yes, he shut up real quick. And they drove off, and I, you know, didn't really think it was a good idea to pursue them to make sure that the arrest was followed through. So I got in my truck and went into town because where I live in this holler, there's no phone reception at all. And
I know that firsthand from trying to reach you. So right.
And we didn't have a landline yet because we just moved in. I'm talking on my cell phone from my mother's house right now in Miami. But anyway, so and that's why the thing in the country, and that's one of the reasons the citizen's arrest is so important, is because you can't depend. Country people can't depend on cops to get out there and stop a crime. Someone's going to, rustle their cattle or steal. You can't wait. And that's why you have a citizen's arrest. You hold them. In fact, in my book, in the preface to my book, I talk about Josh West, who's our state senator. State rep for our area. He's a neighbor of mine. He's a military veteran. He's a Purple Heart, award for valor in Iraq. And he held people at arrest. He's arrested people. He lives down the road from me. Of course, people knew who he was, and so different outcome. And we had a different sheriff there, too.
I know this happens firsthand. I mean, I've seen it. I'm going to refer to New Hampshire because it's what I know. I know about it happening in New Hampshire against a police officer who was harassing somebody consistently over and over and over again. And I know who this person was, okay? And so one day he saw the police officer without his sirens on, with the hottest lights on, going down the road speeding. And so what does this guy do that has been harassed, wrongfully harassed by this police officer? He pulls over the police officer and conducts a citizen's arrest. And, obviously that wasn't taken well. Obviously it was best to go around that town, but knowing the person that did conduct the citizen's arrest, he didn't, because he believes in his constitutional rights. So, and that's a good thing, and it's not to be challenged. Nobody, right, nobody's above the law. When we talk about this, nobody's above the law. So, you told the sheriff at this point that you were coming to town.
I got in my truck. I went into town to get reception. I called my brother, Lance, as a lawyer, just ran by the stuff with him. And, he.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you one bit.
Right. And then I called 911 to help this guy. I should order an ambulance for him. I told him I'm coming in to make a statement. I told him I caught him. Everything I told you, I caught him that they were trespassing and what they're doing and where it was and everything. I got in town into Jay, and I was actually within view of the sheriff's office, a block away, right in front of the Jay police station. And Jay police officer pulled me over, put his gun in my face, put my face on the pavement, and handcuffed me. And
okay,
then the Jay police chief. Right.
Okay, go ahead.
So the police chief escorted me to the sheriff's office. And I read later, and I had that in my book, the police chief's entire report, that he noted I was polite and cooperative and all this. But then he noted that that the sheriff's office had informed them that I was coming into town to turn myself in.
Oh, yeah.
That's a mischaracterization. It's one thing to turn yourself in. That means you're guilty. It's another thing to come make a statement. And he's going to already be on edge when a guy, shoots somebody. But, if it's a farmer and he comes in, they explain, I don't know, but he said so, and he's a so he was trespassing, and he wants to make a statement. These guys are trespassing, and
but, and I'm going to interrupt you. Philpott is the informant. He is the snitch. So he can, he's basically wrongfully immune to all of his crimes because he's a snitch.
But the sheriff's office,
says
he's coming in to turn himself in.
What the heck are they getting out of him being the snitch? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, when the sheriff's office says the guy's coming to turn himself in, what they're saying is you have a guy coming in that just shot someone who has admitted guilt that he didn't
and
have the right to shoot someone. Right. And so now they're not dealing with a guy who, you know, at least claims to have shot someone in self-defense who was trespassing. They're dealing with a guy who's already said, hey, committed a crime shooting someone, and I'm coming to turn myself in. So that explains.
Okay, so you know we've got less than 10 minutes left of the first series in this, and there's, as we know and we have shared, there's a good reason behind it because there's many branches off of what happened with you. So you know, less than 10 minutes. Once again, so that means I'm going to stop you probably at about 7 minutes. Okay, well you know, so
okay.
That I can close out the show for this first part one of this series. But in the meantime, so what's happening with Philpott, Ed, while you were being handcuffed? Had he already gone to the emergency room? Like, what's going on with Philpott? What is Philpott doing?
Well, my face was in the pavement, the veteran, back at the emergency room. Well, Philpott first went to go change clothes. He didn't go to the emergency room straight away. And they never did call the cops.
He went over to your neighbor, who
Jack
Bradley's
house. My neighbor's
Jack Bradley. Okay.
Yeah.
And he went to change his clothes. So why would somebody go to change their clothes after they have been shot in the knee? Why would they go to change their clothes prior to where he actually wound up, which in the hospital, but not in Oklahoma.
Well, if I were working shift and I was talking to interviewing Philpott, I would ask him why he felt necessary to change clothes after the shot, and I would also ask him why he didn't call the police or his accomplices, or I would ask him why they drove to Arkansas instead of staying in Delaware County emergency room. But Gail Wells, the dirty cop they sent out there, he didn't ask him why he changed clothes. He didn't ask him any of that stuff. But I have a family friend. Lance's favorite JAG officer works at the prosecution office in New Orleans, and he told Lance, well, obviously people change clothes after they commit a crime so they won't be identified by people, because remember at that time Philpott was committed a crime and he wasn't calling the cops, he was changing clothes. But I'll tell you another reason to change clothes is if they're full of meth. And another thing that Wells didn't do that he would have if you're doing a real investigation, and we'll get to it later next. But Philpott said I shot him in the back of his leg. Well, if you would have went and
seen the pictures of those shots. Right.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Right, and if you would have analyzed the genes, he could have told from the residue from the black powder. You know, if you couldn't tell by the holes in the genes. You can tell by the black powder, you know, which direction he shot. But they didn't catch the
yeah.
gene.
And there's a recorded interview that he went to change after he changed his clothes. So, again, he admits
yes.
it. And the investigator, you
never
asked
why.
Philpott, you know.
But why would you do that?
And
why would you go straight to the emergency room after your shot?
Okay. So he let Philpott's suspicious behavior basically slide. And we know why.
Right.
Because he
yes.
is. He's got snitch immunity. So when these issues came up in Philpott's interview, the deputy would just change the subject.
Exactly. You could listen to that page I told you about, and it happens dozens of times. He'll say, Philpott said he'd been shot before, but he didn't go to the hospital. He didn't call the police last time. No response
again,
from Wells whatsoever.
And again,
this
is not he said. It's not
right.
he
it's
said
there
he
on the
said,
recording.
These are on the recordings, and nobody has ever refuted this, right? I mean, they
right.
are authentic recordings that were never challenged because there was nothing to challenge. So if you were handling something like this as a military policeman, what would you have asked Philpott?
Well, first thing I would have said, you know, well, why would you go to change clothes instead of going directly to the hospital? And
right.
then I would have wanted to know why, because they never called the police.
Phil and his accomplices call the police afterwards?
And they never call them at all.
Going to Arkansas.
Well,
give me an idea. Give our listeners an idea. You know, how far away was a hospital in Delaware County as opposed to going to Arkansas?
Gravett, where he went, is they're not that much. They're not that much further apart. Maybe 10 minutes. But if you're shot in the leg, 10 minutes is 10 minutes. But the fact is that guy that's in the middle of the road I told you about earlier.
Yes.
That guy, Joseph Bradley, worked at the ER in Gravett, Arkansas, where he went. So, you know, 10 minutes is worth it to go someplace to where, you know, your cousin works, at least to him and his way of thinking. And remember, if Philpott did not know that he was in the clear, there's a place in the interview where Wells tells him, "I am only trying to help you." And that's why that's the name of one of the chapters in my books. After he finally told him, because Philpott was being so evasive, and he just wouldn't play along. And when Wells is trying to feed him answers and give him the narrative and everything, and it wasn't until after Wells told him, I'm only trying to help you, there's a distinct difference where all of a sudden he did know who I was. Philpott did. And before, Philpott wouldn't tell him where he lived. I don't remember the address, all this crazy stuff. Finally, it got through to Philpott that, you know, Wells told him, the only reason why I'm doing this interview is to protect you, in other words. And so
Philpott and his crew, but they didn't call the police at first, but someone eventually did call the police, right?
Yes, ma'am. That would have been Jack Bradley's wife or ex-wife.
Right.
But she called after, and she waited till they were gone before she called. So you can draw your own conclusions of why she was afraid to call them or didn't call them while they were in the house.
Okay. And so the investigator, did they ask any questions about this? I mean,
no.
The investigator, did Philpott actually have insurance in Arkansas? Or, you know, what's the story there?
No, ma'am. Philpott doesn't have a job.
I mean, how many valid reasons could he provide for actually going to Arkansas?
Going to Arkansas.
Right.
Don't know. Okay. Never asked.
To ER where his cousin worked, Philpott was hoping to control the police involvement, wasn't he?
Yes, ma'am, exactly.
Okay, so he's all right. That's how I see
because
it?
Normally ER's call when someone's shot. You know, they call the police. He thought if he went to the ER there, maybe he could avoid that and between not calling
and
the cops.
To get them to believe the stories that he's telling them and get that on the record as opposed to what, you know, potentially really happened.
And
Philpott
said on the interview that he had been shot before and did not go to the hospital or call the police when he was shot the last time. And Wells didn't follow up. What do you mean? How did you get your shot? How did you get yourself shot before? You know, no questions at all.
It is actually 9:28 here. We need to close out the first series. To be continued, we are going to actually continue with the reporting of the shooting, and there's much more ahead in this, as I said, riveting story about Ed Turlington and his journey to justice. I want to thank you all for tuning in tonight. I look forward to next week's show. It'll be the part two of Ed Turlington's story of seeking justice, and ultimately you're going to hear how he won justice. I have the wonderful ability now to change in my contacts. I saw that you were listed as victim of Jay Oklahoma to winner. To truth seeker and winner over public corruption in Oklahoma.
Well, thank you.
Ed, I thank you so much, Marty Oakley. Thank you so much, Stephen Burke, 89.9 FM, Lighthouse Christian Radio in Oklahoma. Thank you so much. We will be back next week for part two in this series where Edwin Turlington wins over public corruption. God bless everybody.
Thank you, Tanya.
Good night for listening, and thank you. And I'm Tanya Hathaway, Tanya Talks, where your voice is heard and your story is told.